I'm ready whenever you guys are.
Feeling good, feeling great. How are you?
Sure.
Accurate.
I'm Matt Robinson.
I'm Noah Bissell.
And this is Graining In.
Jake Hill.
Play it. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light. Today we're back at HQ, a day closer to opening this place again after about a year and a half of being closed. And once again, you'll hear the hisses and the sounds and the clinking of being at HQ, but I think that adds a little bit to the ambiance.
A wise woman told me it sounded like an NPR interview.
I think
recently.
It adds a little
yes.
character with the yes. background sound. Today we're sitting down with somebody we've been talking back and forth a tiny bit for the last few months about having on the podcast. And I'm just going to kind of come right out and be frank in regard of something we said today, or that you said today, that it would be exciting to sit down and talk about making lagers and talk about beer and something that we would be thrilled and excited to do. But right now in beer, everybody's talking about one thing, one very important thing, and that's sexism, misogyny, and all of these things that are happening in what is a male-dominated industry at the surface level. And today we sit down with Brianne Allen, head brewer at Notch Brewing. We've got Alex, who I was excited to see when Brianne came in the door, our resident Notch fanatic here, that yep. got to say hi and chop it up for a minute. I know in my early days of being at Bissell, frankly, trying to like understand what my boss's mentality is about beer and trying to learn more about him and about beer, and there would be a few breweries that he would speak of, and you just pick up that he's speaking highly every time. And then as somebody who didn't know anything about beer, you go on the computer and you research and you try to find out more stuff. And that was Notch Brewing many times for Noah Bissell.
For sure. You know, your employees are always down in the tap room like every other week. There's an Bissell employee there. Or I'll get into work and there'll be like a couple cases of Bissell beer. We're like, where did this come from? It just appears.
You know. I was thinking about this. I don't think I've recommended any one brewery more. Like, you should go. Because it's like, I think Salem's just off.
I mean, it's hard to get to.
Just hard enough to get yes. to versus something lazily right off the highway that I think it gets overlooked maybe a little bit in terms of like, but talk about the experience in the tap room is not like anything in America that's about as like unique of a bubble of feeling to me that mm-hmm. I've really felt anywhere. So, but we can talk about that later, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Because if we get there, I have a lot to say about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, if we get there.
Yeah. And just to close my, I've said it on here a million times, I have a natural excitement about niche concepts because there seems to be almost a direct correlation of a line between like authentic passion and how niche a concept is. If you're going wide, that's for
sure.
market reasons. That's for if you're super niche in one thing, it's because you have this burning passion to share it with people.
Yep.
And like Noah said, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. But we'd be doing a disservice to the platform that you've created over the last couple of weeks that are, would you say hundreds, easily hundreds of people sharing their stories within the beer industry?
No, it's like thousands.
Thousands.
Like tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've shared 1,000 unique stories, and I haven't even got my inbox just says 99 plus. I've never seen it say under
maxed
that.
Maxed out.
Yeah, I have a couple friends going through them right now, just trying to kind of organize what's going on in there because it's just impossible. Instagram has no way to organize messages. So like mm-hmm. if someone mentions you in a story or reacts to a story, or sends you a message individually, they're just all lumped into one area. And
yeah.
there's no way for me to like organize and go through it.
Totally.
So I have ones from like 12 days ago I still haven't read because now they're just buried under like 5 or 10,000 more
yeah.
stories. It's exhausting.
I want to take it back to the beginning of that in thinking about it. Obviously, you're coming from your own unique experience. Sounds like And you shared your experience and then kind of that vulnerability created this space that when you ask the question, so many people
for sure
share that experience, then, and they resonate with that vulnerability, and then it gives them the strength to say the same thing. So yeah. if you don't mind, I know this is very much like a not making it about you thing.
Yep.
But it is. You're the one who provided this platform where people felt safe.
Right.
Could you kind of go back to even the weeks leading up, or like kind of how we got to the first post that created that vulnerability that people were resonating with?
Sure. So we've all been, you know, quarantining for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And before that, I was the chapter leader of the Pink Boots Boston chapter, mm-hmm. which was the largest chapter in the world. And so I've been doing this locally for 5 years, trying to like get these stories out. And I think that's probably why we don't see that many stories from breweries in New England, because we have been working on this and we have been, you know, taking action and talking about it for 5 years now. And I think that's actually really comforting to know that we created a community that we don't have to sit there and like get anxious about, oh no, is there going to be a story about my brewery? Because there's not, because we already tackled this. So I definitely wasn't expecting as many answers as I got, just because we kind of fixed it, but we addressed it already where we're from. But anyway, so I quit Pink Boots right like when the pandemic started. It just became too much. So I think four girls took my spot. And then since we were in quarantine, I kind of forgot all about sexism, because I didn't have to be around anybody else for a year and a half. So I kind of just totally forgot about it, which is insane. Yeah. And so, of course, like the first day I leave my house, I go down to Brighton to build the new brew house. And I was just getting all these comments from all these contractors there, 'cause it's me and our new brewer, Julie. And so we're the only women on site. And I'm just like carrying. It's so stupid, too. They're like simple little comments that just like set me off, because I just wasn't expecting it, because I haven't heard it in a year and a half.
Yeah.
I was like carrying a brew house pipe like from one warehouse to another. And this guy just walks by me, starts talking to me like I'm a dog. And he's just like, where are you going with that? What are you doing here? And I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? No one's ever talked to me like a dog before. And then it just kept happening all day. I'd be literally under the brew house on my back, like trying to put these fucking pipes together. And these men are just coming over trying to talk to me, like asking me if I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like, did you go to school for this? Why are you here? Kind of shit. And then Modern Draft is next to me building a one-of-a-kind draft system that's like never been done before, and no one's going over to them and being like, how did you learn, to do this? Like, they're making something way more intense, and like they're inventing something standing there, and I'm literally just putting clamps and gaskets together, you know? It's like and so I just got so upset, and so all I posted was like, is anyone else getting sexism comments still, or like sexist comments? Because like I left the house for 10 minutes and this is just like out of control. And then it obviously spiraled like from there. I wasn't expecting the reach that it got, obviously.
The reach being the severity into like real sexual assault.
So
real
when it first started, people are sending in, you know, the kind of stories I expected, like, oh, women shouldn't be in breweries. You know, just like dumb comments that people get every day.
Like where's the head
women
brewer?
Women can't lift kegs. Yeah. Or like directing questions to the male server, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which we definitely got a lot of those. And then that was making me even more mad, being just like, I can't believe this is still going on. And since my commute is 2 hours each way, I get the luxury of having to overthink everything for 2 hours on the way home.
I got an hour commute after and I drink, do the same
right
thing.
After having a couple of beers, so I'm like all fucking fired up. And my Bluetooth isn't working, so I have to listen to the goddamn radio the entire way. But as I'm crossing all the different borders, obviously I have to like flip through and find a station like every 20 minutes because I'm going through a different state.
Three states.
It's just so, I know. I was like shaking. I was so mad. I was like, why is this happening to me? And so I got home because I was thinking of like the one story that I think about all the time that happened to me. That's
your personal story.
Yeah. Yep. I was just like, I never really told anyone about it because I don't want to be the one person talking about Hill Farmstead. And so obviously this is all like stewing in me like until I get home, and I just parked my car and I just posted like my story immediately. And I think that's what made it take off, is because I actually like named a name.
Yeah.
And it was my story. And then from that part on, like everybody was just like, you know what? I've had something even more fucked up happen to me. Here's his name. He still works there. I complained to HR. They didn't do anything. And so I was like, I got to help these people. And then obviously there's so many at this point that I can't, so I'm trying to figure that out. But that's the story. That's how it started.
Just as you kind of alluded to, you've been kind of in this realm for a while in terms of advocating for women in this industry. I'd assume that what made this different? You said you hadn't shared that individual story before, but
right.
I think anyone that knows you either personally or online, like, kind of sees you as someone very willing to speak up against that. And I've, you know, seen certainly plenty of smaller instances of you just speaking up. What do you think, was it as simple as naming a name that catapulted all of this, you think?
I think it really was. I think the second someone saw that I was willing to risk, like, my reputation and my career to get my story out there, that everyone was just like, I mean, and I'm posting theirs anonymously, so they get to do it, and it gets to be my face, like, on it, you know? So they have, like, no accountability for what they're saying, and it just became, like, too easy for everybody to just kind of start outing people, is what everyone's calling it, which I don't see it that way.
But yeah.
It just, it totally opened the floodgates of people getting, I get to say my story and have no accountability for what's about to happen because Brienne's going to take, you know, the brunt of all of it. And which is still happening. Like I told you when I came in, people are like so upset with me for not posting their stories today. And they're like, our company's never going to change unless you post this story that I've been trying to send you for a week. I'm like, why is this still like, everyone's clearly just like banking on me outing these breweries, and they're not taking any initiative themselves to, like, even after a week of this being insane, they still aren't taking the accountability to go and, like, report these supervisors or coworkers to anybody. And I just don't know how to, like, get it through that, like, it's okay now. Like, look what we did. It's like everyone's speaking up. Like, we can all say it, but everyone's still too scared. So, like, how do we fix that? I don't know.
How quickly did you start to feel that feeling of all right, everyone's expecting me to just, you know, take this seed and then let it grow for them, I guess. And that's probably not the best analogy here, but do you know what I mean? Like how quickly did that come on?
Well, it was kind of manageable for, like, the first week because I would just go through and there wasn't any real, like, patterns going on. It wasn't, like, the same person being named over and over again at first. And then people started seeing, like, the impact
repeat
of coming
offenders
together as a group kind of thing. And then once I started, like, just having, like, panic attacks. And I was like, I'm going to throw up. There's only so many stories about rape that you can read before you just, like, want to fucking kill yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, I need to take a break. And then I couldn't because people started messaging me being like, why haven't you posted my story yet? And then people were getting mad at me. And so I was like, all right, I have to, like, commit full time to doing this. And I don't think I've posted anything in, like, 3 days. I just don't have it in me anymore, honestly. I forget the question.
And that was the answer. Okay.
And that's what, there's a, being the one, words like brave or things like that, but being the one who's, like, willing to put your face to this. And then everybody else is sharing their story, making progress. If nothing else, the first phase is the awareness phase, right? This is much a feat of awareness. Nobody had any idea that some of these breweries that they might buy stuff from or that they might follow the Instagram and like that this was going on at those breweries. And then I think the second big part of that is just the sheer volume, right? That it's easy to think that maybe this is few and far between, but you see that kind of volume on something.
Yeah.
The awareness phase is the beginning. But when the awareness at that volume, it's, there must be a feeling of responsibility within that of, like, well, now all of this is on me.
Right.
Like, what do I do with this? You know what I mean?
And well, it's hard when it's like people are sending stories of everyday occurrences that they have to endure.
Mm-hmm.
And then it quickly switching into, like, my employer's treating our entire company like shit. And then it turns into, like, this whole new animal. And I wish I saw that sooner, that was happening, because now, like, the whole modern times, tired hands, like, their whole Their whole company is like getting destroyed now. And obviously this was a change that needed to happen, because if you have your entire staff writing to the investors and to the owners of the company being like, we all are being abused by you. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a big change that needed to happen, but that's definitely something larger that I didn't mean to take on.
Yeah.
So today, I was telling Noah, I have so many messages from this one brewery that everyone wants to come up all at the same time because they saw the impact that that had on Modern Times and Tired Hands, and now they all want to get this other brewery shut down. And they're all, but it's all like employees complaining about mistreatment, and it's not about sexism anymore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just like getting out of control, and like I don't think that's my responsibility to help like shut a company down
totally
just because their employees are all upset.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you're a brewer.
I know.
Like, you're not even HR at any company.
I know,
let alone HR for the industry.
Ridiculous.
Which is so fucked up that I don't, it just so I can't get over how backwards it feels. And on the other side, I do get it. People see, okay, there's this platform, and like you say, yeah, there probably would be a quicker, more to the point impact from sharing on this platform. But that's not certainly not why you developed the
right.
I mean, developed isn't even the word.
I know.
You shared a thought. You literally shared a thought, which is the definition of social media.
Mm-hmm.
So then to, you know, flash forward, are we a week or 2 weeks?
It'll be 2 weeks tomorrow.
Okay.
Jeez.
Yeah. So flash forward 13 days. And now everyone, and then talk about, okay, you want to share that message? Like, I'm not responding. Like, it would feel to me like that wouldn't even do anything.
I
for
know.
You to kind of put a post about, like, just so you know, I didn't really ask for this. I was just trying to kind of.
Oh, you know how much shit I would get if I posted something like that?
I mean, how fucked up is that, though?
It's crazy. I went from 2,000 followers to, I think I'm at 57,000 in 3 days.
Yeah.
So
as you settle into that 13 days later and kind of like next actionable step sort of thing.
Yeah.
How are you starting rectifying with like the gravity of all of it?
For sure. So I've been talking to tons of different lawyers and law firms just about getting retribution for these victims. And I've been talking to people trying to put like HR available to companies that can't afford it.
Mm.
And just like just action items, or like reaching out to the BA or Brewers Guild, and just being like, what are you going to do about this? So it's like, I can't kick a brewery out of the Brewers Guild, but it's so great. So Maine set a huge example for their Brewers Guild by sending an email being like, you guys voted that if something problematic like this is reported about a brewery, like we're just going to kick them out. And like after a vote, like, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And so I sent that to like the Massachusetts Brewers Guild. I sent it to the Master Brewers Association, New England District, just being like, are you guys going to do this too? Like, why have you not said anything about it? And they're like, oh, we're working on it. We might have a plan maybe by the end of the summer. And just like, it's not, Maine said this yesterday. Like, why can't you say it today?
Yep.
And like, sorry to break it to you, but half these assholes are on your fucking board of directors.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, is that why it's not going through? It's just, it's so fucking annoying. So I'm really disappointed in the BA and the Master Brewers Association for not taking this head on, especially when there's, like, stories about women getting raped at the Master Brewers Association, like, classes in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not doing anything about
it.
And it's just really frustrating. Maine comes out and it's just like, yeah, we're not tolerating this at all. But everyone else has a really hard time speaking up.
Are you getting, and I'll pivot real quick because I do want to say in reading all, no.
I get like really intense.
For me, I want to follow that thought big time. But you did mention it before about Maine and you're mentioning it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's natural when something like this happens, the first place you look is at home.
Yeah.
You know, like,
home, and then home.
For sure.
And that's what, and I think we had spoken off air in the tech. My girlfriend is studying in school in this realm, and this has truly been like the topic of a lot of dinner table conversations and kind of all this happening. We start talking more, and one of the first things I said, to be honest, was like, I haven't seen one Maine brewery on there.
Mm-mm.
Straight up, that was one of the first things, and like, that's awesome. I don't know what that means, but I think it's okay to feel good about that.
Yeah.
And I feel pretty good about that.
Mm-hmm. And no one was surprised about the Massachusetts ones, but.
Yeah. But then to that point going forward, we're so proud of our guild. Yep. Really proud that we didn't show up anywhere on there, but that's not what all of this is about. Mm-hmm. In terms of what all of this is about is when this thing is created, how does that actually lead to change? You know what I mean? Is the way I think about it. And I do think from what I see online and really on social media and on the internet is that there's some major failures from some big institutions right now.
Yep.
Are you finding other partners in this that are much more receptive outside of the main Brewers Guild? Are there other organizations? Are there other things that are trying to seize this opportunity to move this forward and not, like you said, for reasons of structure and maybe that their members are a part of, but that you aren't hitting that brick wall with?
No, I haven't had any groups reach out and say, like, oh, you've changed the way that we're going to be structuring things. And I mean, those are the three heavy hitters, the Master Brewers, the BA, and the local guilds. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know who's going to make the change other than them. I mean, mm-hmm. they're the ones that can be like, cut the bullshit.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, like I said, have board of directors of people that are running these massive breweries that have a say in, like, the voting and all that stuff. So I sent some emails and they all said we're working on it. The BA came back and said, well, oh, here's 50% off to sexual harassment
training.
I'm sorry,
it's laughable.
Like, what?
It's fucking laughable.
I mean, a lot of this is, and I hate to chortle at a lot of this stuff, but it's absurd to hear said
right.
out loud.
And I'm sure there's a story behind it, and they're probably working on something mm-hmm. great or whatever, but in the interim, like, that's what people are seeing, and it's pissing a lot of people off. I did speak to the diversity and inclusion division with Dr. J, and she said they put together a forum for people to be able to, like, report these kinds of things to the BA, and it was launched, I think, like, early last summer, mm-hmm. and they haven't gotten a single complaint from anyone in the entire country.
Jesus.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you know that existed?
I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't, but I would assume that, I mean, frankly, at least in the New England locally, I would assume if anyone would know about that channel, it would be you. And,
right.
And that
and
probably...
I've had, you know, lunch and dinner with Dr. J, and I still just had no idea.
And, yeah, I guess there's a lot to be... It could be extrapolated on that. A couple of things. I guess first, when you're talking about organizations, where do you see Pink Boots factoring into all this?
They don't. They, so I left because I've had a lot of issues with National. Just like trying to move things forward at a larger level, like kind of like what's happening right now. And just making a bigger statement with them than they're willing to say. And they're very much, you know, nonprofit trying to raise money for education. They're not really out there trying to stop like sexism mm-hmm. in the workplace. And they did send out a letter saying like, oh, we don't tolerate this or whatever, but like, what are they gonna do about it? You know, that all their members are women, obviously they're not tolerating it.
Yeah.
They sent me an apology. They were like, sorry, we didn't take this seriously. And I was like, yeah, fuck off. But yeah, I don't see them as a player in this at all. It is interesting that a lot of breweries are like making beers or raising money to go towards organizations that help victims, and a lot of them are just donating it to Pink Boots, which is great, but I don't think women getting an education right now is going to stop people from having sexist thoughts, you know, or actions.
What do you, if you had to point at things in terms of that, what does stop these actions?
I mean, I just wish people would have the courage to report it, and I wish the people that were getting these reports would have the courage to act on them, because a lot of people are just afraid. Everyone's so scared about, yeah. like, oh, I don't want to look bad, or this person's my friend. I don't want them to, like, be mad at me for, like, mm-hmm. reporting them, or my friend's friends with them. He's such a good guy. Like, they're all not going to be my friends anymore. Everyone's just so afraid of, like, what they're going to look like, and it's so fucking selfish. It's just like, who the fuck cares about you? This person just got hurt.
Yeah.
Like, they got physically
and emotionally
hurt, and you're afraid of to lose a friend. Like, go fuck yourself. Are you kidding me? Sorry, I'm, like, so fucking mad right now.
Let it out.
But would that speak to...
so stupid.
Would that speak to accountability and the framework to get to accountability?
Sure. I mean, I just wish... Yeah, I guess the... Even though people are like, oh, we just need better HR companies and accessibility to these HR companies, they're still too afraid to, like, eventually it's going to be known what mm-hmm. happened to one or two parties that are involved. That's the whole point. So I, even though there are HR companies, people are still going to have that fear that there's going to be some type of retaliation or it's going to make them look bad. And so
yeah.
I think just like turning the blind eye is like the biggest concern here and like why people aren't stepping up and like just putting themselves out there. Like, I think that's the biggest concern for me. And I think that's why everyone's like, you know, letting me take the brunt of it. Cause they're like, whoa, someone doesn't care if like they're the ones in front
it's
of everybody.
It's a lot easier.
I know. It's like, it's not that bad. Like, I just find everyone, it's like not that bad.
Especially now.
I posted 1,000 HR complaints in a week. And I'm still here and everything's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
fine, but
still here.
It takes a mental toll, but it's not like people are telling me I'm not going to be your friend anymore because, or like I'm not losing my job for reporting bad behavior. It's yeah. like, I'm not getting kicked out of festivals for reporting bad behavior. It's like, if anything, these people are going to be like awarded with like, thank you so much for like, for having the bravery to like say something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hot. Jesus.
It's hot up here. It
is. I think two things I do want to clarify that are probably somewhat interconnected. The first, I'll say them both, and you can kind of take with them whatever you want. The first, when you say Pink Boots as an educational resource, confuses me as the explicit mission. And I'll let you expound upon that, but first, kind of connected to that, is the fear thing. Do you think that fear, obviously the fear is being created in the first place because it's a woman, I think in most of these...
Because of what?
Because it's a female experiencing the situation wouldn't happen to a man, period. I guess what I'm asking, do you think that fear thing is a human thing about, like, I'm worried about my job being in jeopardy, or do you think it is strictly related to gender?
I mean, I definitely think it would make it easier if women were in higher positions in the company. Uh-huh. It would make it easier for people or women or people of color or minorities to be able to talk to someone that's kind of understands where they're coming from,
yeah.
for sure. So Pink Boots definitely by educating women to further their careers. That's the mission. Education furthers the career.
Yeah.
And hopefully by furthering that career, women are put in those positions to be able to make that change. So people do feel more comfortable coming out and talking about it. Where does the fear come from?
It was a typically not great question.
I mean, it's pretty historical that like, snitches get stitches, right?
I know the phrase. I think it's kind of
that life a long time ago.
I feel like that people still see it that way. I don't know.
Have you seen that in practice? Have you seen retaliation happen? I'd assume. I should stop saying assume for one, but looking at Notch, I think beyond the beer, I think they are. You guys are a. I think what most of the industry looks at as a model for what female involvement in beer should be is not something that's necessarily like hammered upon. Like, look, it's women brewing this. It's just a thing that it's just who brewed it.
Yep.
It's not the point. The point is the beer, and that's just a happenstance almost. From stories and stuff before this, as just especially within being in the position you were in Pink Boots, have you seen those fears come to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stories that came out, people said they did report it to HR and then they got fired for like being the victim because they were like, well, it's your fault for wearing that skirt that day, so you're the issue. You need to leave because you're distracting all the men, kind of thing. And it's not just men, it's everybody. I mean, there are a lot of instances where the HR is female or she's the owner or whatever, and she's the abusive one, you know, not taking the comment seriously, whether because she's friends with the people, what have you. I have a personal situation that happened at Notch. We're actually dealing with it right now. We had an employee that after an Oktoberfest, we went out and he stuck his hand up the back of my shirt and like started like touching me. And it freaked me the fuck out because he was like a manager in the tap room and I didn't know what to do. It was at Deep Bellum and I left and I had driven all those kids to Boston and I got in my car and I left and I left them in Boston because I was like, I don't know how to deal with this.
Yeah.
And then I went back to work and I didn't tell anyone for a while, but I was really afraid of this guy for some reason. And because I was like, there's no way he doesn't know what he did.
That he did that.
Like I left him in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, he's going to be like, I wonder if it's because I stuck my hand up her shirt. But so it took me a while to gain the courage to like tell Chris. Mm-hmm. And we have an outside operating HR company. So we basically have to tell management, which my manager is Chris. And then they have to bring it to the outside HR company. And then they direct like what's possible, what isn't, investigation, what have you. And then I told Chris I didn't want to make it an actual report because, one, my roommate was this kid's best friend, and all my best friends were the other bartenders working there. And they were all, I told them what happened, and they were like, there's no way that he would do that. And I was like, you were there. You saw it. You were right next to me. And they were just like, yeah, but we don't believe it anymore. And so I didn't report it because I was like, well, all these people are going to be like so upset if they think I'm lying, even though they saw it. So it's like, it's very easy to get caught in that like fear of, well, no one's going to believe me anyways kind of thing. But unfortunately, because I didn't report it, he went on to sexually assault my best friend at a bar a couple months later. And then when she reported that, it was handled really oddly. The outside HR company said there was nothing we can do about it. And Chris got so upset with that answer from them, he just fired him because he was like, I'm not dealing with this shit anymore. Yeah. And yeah, it's just a really hard thing to navigate when it happens. And so if Notch has that much difficulty like handling it with all the women in power there, then obviously, it's going to be really hard for everybody else just dealing with this stuff right now. So, like, I get it. It's hard.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the solution is because obviously the HR companies aren't really the solution. But
do you wish with that situation? I have a story to share. I'll share myself after. But for that specific situation, though, thinking back on it now, I guess for just rough context of timeline, how long ago was that?
My occurrence was 2 years ago, or maybe 2.5 Oktoberfests ago, and then maybe 6 months after that was the assault. So no one's been talking about it for a year and a half, maybe 2 years. So it's just coming to light now. He was just fired a couple of months ago.
Do you? I'm sure that the what I would have done differently scenarios cross your mind, but maybe it hasn't. Do you think about that at all?
I mean, it's really comforting to see like our other employees and coworkers coming forward and being like, you know what, I heard about this and I knew about it and I didn't do anything, and they were like, because they were scared and they didn't know what to do about it. So no, I'm kind of, I'm not saying I'm glad it happened this way. Obviously it had a bigger impact now with all the stories coming out for people personally than if I had done it then. And then mm-hmm. the whole staff quit in solidarity because they liked this fucking guy.
Yeah.
So no, I think the way it happened is the way it was supposed to happen, but I believe in that shit.
Serendipity universe type yeah. shit.
Yeah.
Right there.
Obviously, the people that got assaulted after me aren't very happy about it. Yeah. But.
Yeah. I'd like to believe that, too. But sometimes I wonder when I was going to say, and there's no need to get, like, super deep into it because it's not hyper-relevant here, but it kind of is because it's not really something I've ever talked about with anyone outside of Matt and Hester. But in college, I was drugged and sexually assaulted. It's not something you hear from a man much at all. It was a guy, older guy than me, right, regular at this restaurant I was working at. He kind of knew the brewery was maybe, you know, I'd float that out there as I could for just kind of thinking about investor stuff and just being excited about it. And yeah, no need to get into the details, but basically feeling really, the last thing I kind of remember is feeling like far too fucked up, as I should, at the bar. I'd met him for drink, again, in my head, being like, all right, like, this guy has some money, he tips huge, like, maybe I can talk long term with him here.
Yeah.
And yeah, just vague remembrances being way, way more fucked up than I should have been based off what I had. And yeah, woke up at this guy's place and yada yada. This is, but anyway, the not knowing what to do with that, and I didn't do anything with it. I just fucking felt ashamed about it for
right
ever since, really.
And he's not an investor now, is he?
Fuck okay. No.
Well, that would be like a perfect example.
From the fear part, seeing him, yeah, he would still come in. And it was like,
is he still coming now?
This was the restaurant I worked at in college. This was like a decade ago.
That's terrifying. And then having to see that person every day and not being able to do anything about it.
Well, yeah, there probably was, who knows what I could have done, but I only say that to say that is one small instance that, frankly, in the grand scheme of things, was probably pretty tame. It wasn't the belief part about it was, I didn't tell anyone, so who's going to believe me or not? But what actually happened, and I'm sorry I'm making this about, I'm not at all mean make this about me, but years later, we were in Copenhagen for a beer festival. And basically the only ever time I've ever felt that same feeling of like, what the fuck is happening to me, was there. And I don't think anything happened there, but I'm positive that somehow something got in my system that was intentionally put there, not by me.
Yeah.
Because I literally woke up, I had lost my phone, wallet, all my shit. Woke up like with all my shit basically gone, kind of in the plaza thing by War Pigs, which I was so far away. It was so disoriented and scary, yada yada. I don't think anything sexual happened, but I know something happened to affect me.
Right. I mean, same similar feeling as the first time.
Exactly. But because I hadn't told anyone about it, it was just kind of like, I was trying to...
You got too fucked up.
Exactly.
Dude. And I was trying to... there's nothing you can say about it.
Exactly. Because I was like, well, I'm not going to throw this fucking other thing in this just to justify my story that I don't want to tell anyone about anyway. All that is to say, like, that's just this one very, very small instance, but the fear, the not being certain who to tell, the not knowing what to do, the shame, like, all these feelings are, I can relate to, I guess, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And it, I don't even really know why I'm bringing that up right now.
There's actually been a lot of really good, influential brewery male friends coming out saying really similar stories that you told me. Which is, I mean, it sucks because a lot of people are taking the stories that I'm posting and they're saying, oh my God, this is shocking. And then a lot of people are coming out being like, no, it isn't. We all knew this was happening and we didn't do anything about it. Shame on us. But what is shocking to me is that there are tons of influential male brewers coming out saying, like, this shit, like, happened to me, too. But they're all, no one wants to share it because they obviously don't want to steal the spotlight from the women and the victims that we're focusing on now. But it is actually, like, a huge issue with everybody. It's not just women. It's everyone.
It's definitely mostly women, I think. And I really hope that I'm not at all trying
right
to steal
right now
any...
it's the women, like, being able to feel like they can speak up, but maybe there's someone that needs to do it, like, for men, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that speaks to the bigger thing of, like, why can't we change this easily? If we all know this, there's a small percentage of predatory people.
Yeah.
There's a small percentage of people that don't feel bad when they make other people feel bad.
That's makes me the most angry is like I can't even kill like a mouse, or like if I saw a mouse in a mouse trap, I'd like throw
I've seen
up.
Noah take spiders outside 500 times.
Right, I'm just
dude.
Like, how could you?
I can kill
ever
a spider. I'll be honest, I can't kill a mouse.
Fucking rape somebody and like hurt somebody intentionally over and over again, multiple people, and like not feel bad about it. I just don't understand that feeling. Like it's just like this. It's a human emotion that I think is so normal. to just have empathy towards other people and their situations and not wanting to hurt them or learning from these situations. But then why are there so many people that are okay with doing it? I just don't understand.
And even, I think it's a very small, the math on the people that are okay with doing it, I really believe is very, very small. I think it's a small percentage.
I mean, apparently not.
Well, compared to the whole number.
I'm pointing at my phone when I do that, sorry. It's behind the Corona.
The Corona's really to blame here.
If you take the totality of everybody in the brewing industry, and I'm not basing this on any hard science, I'm just being an optimist.
Right.
That small percentage, what at scale in a huge community, is a large number of instances and people, but it leads me to that next thing of, but if the majority of us are good, if the majority of us how do we incentivize or get the framework right that we all do the right thing when we see it, hear it, suspect it, have an inkling, you know, because it kind of leads to, like you said, the thing gets messy and these are the hard things to do, to go out of your way to recognize, to go out of your way to be in tune, and to go out of your way to blow a thing up that is working pretty good for everybody.
Yeah.
When it happens, how do we get to that place where, because what you showed is the power of strength in numbers.
Let's throw some more stuff on you. Yeah.
It's your responsibility to answer it. But that's the part that tears me in looking at all. Like, I know so many good people in this place.
Right. So why is this happening?
Why can't we just phase out the fucking assholes? Is there any insight to that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, what would you do if you found out, like, your business partner, like, what would you do if you found out someone accused, like, Matt of sexual harassment? You know?
It's a great question. Mm. I would definitely... It's a very good question because of my...
He's obviously a pivotal player in this game.
And also, more beyond that, like, he's someone I know very intimately and well and trust and have faith in. But you could, I'm sure, say that about any one of these people.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this. In light of everything, 1,000%, my answer would be I would assume guilty till proven innocent in the context of the business. In very, not a public thing, but I don't know how else you can look at it now.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's easy to say, like, oh, I would go through these steps to make sure that there was retribution.
Steps? I don't have steps.
Well, just being like, oh, you were wrong and you did this, and just acknowledging that it happened. But then a lot of people say that they would do that, and then when they're faced with their best friend being the one that's being accused of this stuff, they're kind of just like, well, I'm going to go aside with my best friend, obviously.
And I even think that's the worrisome part of it. To me, I think it might be even lower than that, that it's just like, that's the very hard thing. That's the very messy. Now, there's a ton of friction here. It's very messy. It's very hard.
It could ruin a company's culture.
I could maybe sleep all right at night if I can... It's like purposeful ignorance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't go seeking it out, then I'm not going to find it and have to deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's worse off for everything. But I think and looking at myself and talking to my girlfriend, and like, first of all, she was like, you mansplain the fuck out of everything. I was like, well, I think I do that to everybody.
Yeah, he mansplains everything to me. So,
but I haven't even like, you're the person I care about the most in this world, and I'm like building my team with to take this thing to death.
For sure.
And like, I haven't even engaged in this in a deep, like we have over the year, but it's all been hypothetical and theoretical, and it's never been like, how the fuck do I make you feel when I'm at my worst? Like, that conversation happened for the first time a week ago. You know
because
what I mean?
Because of this.
Yeah, to be honest. But it's not, it's just that it's like, it's all passive, and it's not searching for it, because when you search for a bomb, then you have to deal with it. And I think if nothing, in looking at actionable steps forward, and it's the most absurd thing to sit here on the microphone and be like, so, Brienne, where do we go from here?
I know, right?
You know what I mean? It's absurd, but what's going to come from the awareness that was created are who are the groups of people that are going to take the next steps and make the framework. And to be frank, even like we just said, in this hypothetical, I don't like being a hypothetical harasser, but here we are. That's what happened.
Sorry.
But like asking Noah, what would you do? And Noah's like, going through the steps, like, I don't know the steps for that
situation.
No
steps, right. That's for
sure. Well, that's step, I mean, that's step
just
one.
Just acknowledging that it could happen,
well,
I guess.
Yes. Like, what to do if it like, even... Yeah. You have to put your mind in even communicating to your staff.
Right.
If this happens, this is what our plan and what we are going to do. And now you've leveled one piece of friction in terms of if somebody were to witness something, I don't even know who to how to report. Or
for sure.
Like really getting deep into and almost incentivizing the looking for or de-incentivizing the ignorance. Mm-hmm. I think that's a better sentence. Because right now the incentive is to be ignorant to
yeah,
it for
to
a lot of people.
Keep everyone happy kind of thing.
Until it happens,
save the
until
company,
it affects you.
Whatever.
Is there a twisted benefit to be, as that paradigm starts to shift, that the from a businesses now, right this second, are actually, the motivation's almost completely flopped. Mm-hmm. Where actually the motivation would be to come out and take, like, extra punitive action on someone. And I would think that you might feel multiple things about that.
Well, it's, a lot of breweries are just saying, "Oh, we're with." And it's so awkward because they all call me rat magnet.
It's
and
tough.
I'm like, please stop.
Can I say
one quick thing.
Why is it that?
It's from exactly what you said. And now I won't even ask that. I'm sure you've been asked more than enough.
It's a good story.
It is. Well, if you want to tell it, then I'm all ears. But last week for the podcast, we were talking with two guys from Weldworks. And this came up, as I'm sure it does in virtually any brewery-centric conversation right now, which I think is inarguably a good thing. But it... Knowing what your name is,
I'd love to talk about the rat magnet stuff.
And
Wagner has stepped down from the company because rat magnet said, like, you just ruined how serious this moment was supposed to be.
It was.
So when I heard like all of the Allagash employees were all reaching out to me, being like, Rob Todd's going to say a thing. He's going to make an announcement. And I was like, I would love to see Allagash say, because Rat Magnet is blah, blah, blah. I was waiting for it. But they didn't mention me. And I was like, oh, one brewery didn't mention my name. But the worst is, yeah, so like a lot of people are stepping down from their positions that are being accused that are like brewery owners. And they all say Rat Magnet said this about us, so we're leaving the company or like something. And it's just like, why are you saying my name next to it? Like, I don't understand.
How are you rectifying that in kind of real time? Because you seem to almost show, in the talking about it, almost show, like, sympathy to that, which is understandable but interesting.
Well, just feel like they're accepting responsibility for their actions, but also blaming me for having to do that at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's, like, really fucking annoying.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, there's breweries just saying, oh, we stand for, you know, equality or whatever.
We stand with Rat Magnet
told us that equality matters. So we sit, and it's like totally unprompted, and like breweries are just coming out and saying it without, you know, they don't have to say that.
Yeah.
They stand with me. Like, why wouldn't you stand for this?
Totally.
Like, what? People shouldn't have to go out and say, we believe in equality. Like, oh, I assumed that you already did. Did you not realize that before? I don't know.
It's a tough one because with the Black is Beautiful beer, and then there was something else. I guess it doesn't really apply, but with All Together, and just throughout, it's a product of social media in general. For companies using social media, it's something you... It's this thing you feel obligated to express. But as you say, I've always just kind of been like, all right, well, if you're at least going to express it, like, at least make it unique.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the way I feel. And I saw that all unfold with Hester. Like, she thought about this. We just posted something on Friday.
Yeah, she put a really personal, like, message out there, which
and
I think
is great.
It took
time to make. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the first thing of, like,
right,
I stand with Brienne. It was real.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be like, we're awesome at all. Hester's definitely awesome. But I feel that that's lacking. And when I do even... it's more of a sense thing, I feel like. And when I do smell that a little bit, I cannot help but just dismiss it. And that doesn't necessarily mean like, well, then you're terrible, you're doing all these things and just hiding behind this. Mm-hmm. But it I can't help but ask myself, like, well, I post it all. As you say, like, it seems like that should be assumed.
Right. And so Notch just got a ton of shit for not posting anything about it. And so tons of people were messaging the Notch page and calling Chris and emailing the company being like, why aren't you saying anything?
Yeah, you need to figure it out, Chris.
And he was just like, she still has a job.
She's had a job for 4 years.
Yeah. But we like kind of felt obligated to say that Notch was a part of it, even though like it's pretty obvious that we already are, or I wouldn't be allowed to do this and still have a job. But people like are expecting breweries to come out and speak about it, and I don't really think that's fair, especially when they're all tagging me, so you know like they're only doing it because of this movement, which I don't see this as a movement.
And that's why I asked you about the way you feel on the other side, because I have trouble not looking at anything in just like the most macro way. It's just, I'm suck at the details. It's the way that I think. And to Noah's point,
Big forest guy.
I can't see a tree, but there's a forest right there. But truly, like, you'll see, here come the posts. You know, as soon as you see 4 big ones or 5 big ones, then everybody else tacks on behind. And so you think about that and like, well, this can never be a bad thing. This is inarguably a good thing.
Yeah. It's just a lot. There's a lot all at once.
It's a lot.
I don't know. I think it's unfair. There's a lot of like brewery writers out there just being like, well, why hasn't this brewery posted a statement yet? And everyone's just expecting breweries to be posting statements right now. And it's like, or you could just address the sexual harassment that's happening at your
A statement's nothing if you're not acting on it.
Our CEO stepped down today. They'll be back tomorrow, though. It's like, come on.
He's taking a day to think about what he's done.
But there have been some brewery owners have reached out to me personally and wrote me a letter being like, at first they'll message me and say, take that down, it's not true, I can't believe you posted this about me, fuck you. And then 2 days later they'll send me, you know what, I totally did all those things and it took till now for me to realize how wrong it was and that I was just doing it and taking advantage of people and I don't want to hurt people anymore and I'm quitting the industry for good. And I've gotten so many of those and I just say back to them, I'm so proud of you for realizing that and taking action. And they're all just so apologetic and they're like, don't be proud of me, I'm such a predator, blah blah blah. And it's like, well, at least you're taking the action to remove yourself and finding help. I don't know.
And do you believe those people can change?
I mean, I don't think they should be telling me this shit. I don't give a fuck about these people. Honestly, I'm like, go tell the person you just sexually assaulted why are you telling me? Or I have people's wives messaging me being like, you just ruined our family because you posted 10 stories about my husband hitting on taproom servers. I'm like,
that's the way you take it?
10 people said it and you're mad at me? I don't know. Maybe it's true. But every time a brewery messages me and says, I don't want this up about me, I say, fine, and I take it down. I don't want to talk about it. I have brewery owners calling me all day, every day for the past 2 weeks, trying to explain themselves to me.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't care what your side of the story is. I'll just tell me to take it down. I'll take it down. I don't want to hear you explain to me why you were racist that one time.
Yeah. Explain to you.
Yeah.
And that's this
go
weird.
Go explain it to the employee.
Well, I guess I'm the conduit of literally everything wrong in the industry.
God.
I don't know what makes me kind of feel this, but I do sometimes have a bias when I hear what you just said, don't feel like it's almost then trying to revert. Sometimes it feels to me when I've seen that stuff, obviously far less than you, but see that it almost feels like trying to reverse it so much that then the sympathy card is somehow played for, and that has all, no matter what we're talking about, whether it's sex, any misstep as a human being, it does not have to be sex. That has, since I've been a kid, has driven me nuts when it's almost like trying to overcompensate of like, oh no, I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, I think that was admitted. Mm-hmm. But you can let's talk about how you're going to become not a piece of shit, maybe.
Right.
And I... Yeah, I hate to jump in on having a hard opinion on that, but you see that outside of this topic.
100%.
And it leaves such a bad taste in my mouth because it seems so superficial.
And I wish I had like a statement, but like a list prepared of different organizations. Like one for victims, one mm-hmm. for like people to reach out to HR companies, one for abusers needing to have a reckoning on what they did. And then another list of like lawyers or people for people to talk to. But it's not that organized right now. And so like you keep asking me what the next steps are. And it's like obviously reach out to these organizations and find a way to fix it. But I just don't have... I haven't had the time to like actually put those lists together.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Do you and kind of maybe a good place to kind of close on this too, as this happens so fast, you affect again the awareness point. Mm-hmm. Nobody has done that better. The awareness point you drove right in front of everybody.
For sure.
Do you have ambitions or goal? Like, how are you rectifying with that last piece in terms of how to take it forward?
I mean, I've tried to join the Master Brewers Association board. Was denied. I tried to join the Massachusetts Brewers Guild and was denied. Mm. And they're all like, oh, brewery owners only, like to these things. It's just like, so I have tried to, so that's when I started Pink Boots, because I was like, well, if I can't join like these boards and make a change there, yeah, I'll just start my own thing. That obviously didn't work out. So I don't know. I guess it's just like in my own hands right now. I don't really have like a plan.
Yeah.
Do you feel obligated to find one?
I mean, people are putting a lot of pressure on me saying like, what happens next kind of situation.
We've done it 20 times in about an hour
and
a half.
But I just feel like we made such a big awareness and a big splash in this. I just don't understand why people can't take this information and just all go make the change together. I'm not sure why it's all being like, oh, you're going to be an advocate for this forever and help us forever now, right? And it's like, I just gave you like the tools to like be brave and like take this in your own hands. Like, why, like I was saying, people are still asking me, why aren't you posting our stories? We want to take this company down. They treat us so badly. And it's like, I just gave you all these tools to like fix it yourself. Why are you still not acting on that?
Yeah.
So no, I don't believe that anything's going to change and this is all for nothing. I really don't think anything's going to change. Everyone posted their statements. They said they're going to be better at it and nothing's going to happen. A couple people stepped down from their roles. They'll be back. And we'll just never hear about it. It's like really pessimistic, but I just truly don't believe that something like this is ever going to be fixed.
Wow.
I mean, I'm certainly...
You look shocked.
No, I don't mean it like that.
It's really sad.
A, it's real.
Yeah.
Because you've given the big Jay-Z guy, you've almost given like the blueprint of like, I'm taking this for all of you.
Three? Yeah, it took 2 weeks.
I'm taking this on like a magnifying
like,
glass for all
of
this.
Imagine if everyone
just
did
it. And look what I just did.
Right.
And look, I'm still here. I'm still breathing. I shake a tiny bit here and there, but it's a lot. But I'm here and I'm okay. Organize yourself. Or do this as well.
Yeah. We just saw the strength in numbers happen before our eyes. So like, why can't we continue that?
I'm certainly more optimistic than that. I'm just an optimist by nature.
Yeah.
But I'd certainly agree with it's almost what I end up on the wrong side of some of the cancel culture, like woke conversations. And it's not because I'm like, those are the things that have fired me up forever. It's in the degree of the, like how tactical that is to affecting change.
Right.
Goes off the road at some point because all it does is incentivize victimhood.
Mm-hmm.
It de-incentivizes empowerment, mm-hmm. and it does all of these things that, frankly, hearing you talk about today are really kind of hitting home
with
me that, like, there's a balance there of it's okay that these things aren't okay, and we shed awareness to it, but what the fuck do we do when we have the awareness?
No one knows.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And well, so why do you think Maine is so successful in
because, like you said, the guild came out quickly and said, like,
well,
this is a path to accountability.
It came out last year.
Yeah. Let him speak.
I would just say, like, I was going to ask you the same question, and I think you would probably answer it better, because to me, the ability to come out that quickly already speaks to the environment that already exists. You can't come out that hard and fast if you have a bunch of skeletons in the closet, I guess.
Right.
So I've thought about that a ton. Like, why isn't that? It makes me think.
It's not like Maine is the most diverse state in the country.
It's actually the opposite.
The worst.
Yes, it is actually one of the most whites. I think it's the whitest state there
is. Right. So why? Is it just that we don't have the opportunity to be assholes, or what?
That's interesting.
There certainly is a. I mean, it's hard. I've lived here my whole life. I can't speak on what it's like to live, work, and brew somewhere else. But it does feel like news travels so quick here within the brewing industry. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that plays a role. I'd like to think just like. Why I haven't moved anywhere else is I like Maine. I like the people here, and I have faith in the people here. But hearing myself say that out loud, that's such a homeristic thing to say. Like, well, of course, we're good.
Right.
And I don't feel that way, carte blanche like that. But yeah, I don't really have... It comes back to that word culture.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, like, culture in the beer industry, and culture can be looked at as on the macro of like every craft brewer in the world. It can be looked at on the kind of pseudo macro of like the American craft beer industry. Then you can keep distilling that, and it's still culture. I mean, there's a culture within your own household
for sure. Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's probably some byproduct of that that has thousands of inputs to get to where the state it's at now, but I don't know.
So I have an idea. And I think it's the amount of breweries that you guys have. And I mean, a lot of them are some of the biggest breweries in the country, right? And they're setting such a good example for all the breweries underneath them. And I think that's
It's Rob Todd. It's Rob Todd. Everywhere you look, it's
you can
Rob
shout
Todd.
Him out.
But it's just like when you have people setting good examples that are in power, it's very easy for everyone else to be like, well, we don't want them to think we're a piece of shit, so we should probably live up to those expectations that they set for themselves. And I think that definitely trickles down to not only just the breweries, but the bar scenes and the bar owners and the bar servers, because everyone's working so closely together in Maine. It's so very localized, and it's very celebrated, the craftsmanship that's happening in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's directly influenced the good behavior here, and then obviously in other states that have the bigger breweries that are setting the tone for the Brewers Guild. So like Night Shift is running Massachusetts Brewers Guild, and they're being called out for like being racist and what have you.
Yeah.
So now like other breweries are gonna be like, well, if they can get away with it, like we can too, kind of precedent. So I just think we set a really high bar here, and other breweries, I mean other guilds and communities and states haven't, and like what do we do to like change that, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. I think it could start from the top.
It's account, you got to be able to cut the legs off,
right?
The big ones and the bad ones. It's with all of this stuff, it's how it's accountability. And if you don't have the route to accountability, because it's de-incentivized, because generally those ones are part of the problem.
Right.
This thing just festers and grows and remains cancerous and toxic forever. I've talked about it on here a few times, but my background is opiate addiction. And like, if one of these pharmaceutical companies that built this on purpose, if one of those people went to jail for life and didn't get $1 billion fine when you made $14 billion, when it wasn't a cost of doing business, one human being goes to jail for life. Every boardroom, everywhere, you don't want to go to jail for life.
Right.
The conversation changes immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to George Floyd. Like, this thing's, as soon as a cop goes to jail for life, well, I don't know that I want to be so quick on that trigger next time. It is accountability, I believe, every single time.
Well, so this isn't the first time this has happened. There's been so many other brewery owners like Melvin and all them like getting called out for these things, and it's been a big blow up in the craft beer community, and everyone's heard it and everyone's shocked and whatever, but then it just goes right back to it. So like, why isn't this one sticking yet?
We haven't seen if it's going to, and to your point, that's where frankly, that's where I agree with the collateral damage. Mm-hmm. I don't know tired hands. I don't know anything. I'm a believer in...
I don't know them either.
I'm a believer in numbers.
Right.
If one person says something about anything and I don't know anything about it, there could be context missing. There could be...
Not when there's 100 employees.
When there's 100, you're an asshole.
Like, this person stabbed me yesterday, yeah. And they're the owner. When there's... You're just like, what the fuck is going on? And I think they're setting a really huge example for everyone else being like, yo... They're the fucking owner. There's nothing we could do to hold them accountable. They're the owner of the fucking company. And now them in Modern Times are showing that, you know what, like, we don't have to, like, take this anymore. Like, we can change this culture ourselves. And that's the safety and numbers thing that I'm, like, talking about. And they actually did it. And they took it and they ran with it. And I'm, like, so proud of all of them. And hopefully that really does set an example for the other breweries where people are like, I'm afraid of the management. Like, what do I do? I'm afraid of the management. They're not going to help me. No one's helping me. Yeah. And you're just like, well, why don't you all just get together and tell them to fuck up?
Yeah.
Like, come on. Those are steps, like, as a community that we can take. Yeah. Obviously not personally in a...
No. You need the collateral damage. You need the accountability.
Right. So we just have to stay on people and make sure that there are, like, things we have to... I have to stay on people and make sure that they're, like, actually taking steps to, like, improve things in the future.
Because you asked for that.
Yeah, because it's my responsibility. Because you asked for that. Now. Yeah.
Just to say one kind of closing thing before I have to ask you about this beer in the glass, and I think that might be a welcome reprieve.
Yes,
getting the
please.
Sense. But it's I can only imagine how maybe hard it is to relish in the feeling at all now. But to the question about whether or not this will stick or not, to me, I think that was a very much a high watermark to actually see in action management, almost a revolt almost happen. Because that's unprecedented. As far as my eyes, certainly within sexism and beer, that's absolutely unprecedented. So from where I stand, if that's a huge marker to me, that if nothing else, we flash forward however many increments of time down the timeline, I think that individual thing of seeing like, oh, that is possible, I think that will carry a humongous amount of weight going forward.
I hope so.
And I'm not trying to be another person.
No,
that
I know
says,
you're
well,
a pessimist. I don't, he's a
exactly.
pessimist too.
Yeah,
I don't get
it's true. It's true. But to me, I mean, that was shocking to me to see that happen and unfold, and especially to see it unfold that quickly. Despite my habitual pessimism, I can't help but see that as a sign of change. But as you say, time will tell. But. Anyway, let's talk about beer, which is ultimately why this all.
I do.
So
in this outline that we have in front of us, there is a million things written about what we just talked about, and then towards the end of this outline is pitch life with big exclamation points and big question marks, and bottles with big exclamation points and question marks. And we're drinking it right now. And
wow, you guys are so prepared.
I want to say, though, I'm not even that prepared because I had no idea
that I was bringing it.
Both of those boxes would be checked when you showed up. So thank you immensely for that.
Yeah, but it's the only Notch beer I have in house. I haven't been to work in days, so.
Yeah.
And that goes first. Oxbow second.
That's a tough life. Only having Pitchline pills.
I know.
16.9s in your house.
It's a hard life.
Talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. What's going on with Notch? I mean, this beer seems like it might be a great place to start. I know that's been a huge labor of love for you guys, at least over the last year, maybe more. But yeah, what is going on at Notch? From in any way you want to talk about
such
that?
Such a hard pivot. Because
I'll be. It had to happen at some point, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because something tells me this won't be the last time you are on a recorded format talking about this. So let's talk about beer. Let's bring it back to the good
so
old days.
Yeah, so the Pitch Project, this is the first time we've been able to actually, like, get it in people's hands, not on draft. And unfortunately, so this is the third batch. The second one we did came out, like, the week the shutdown happened. And so... not even the week. It was like everyone was quarantined though, and it was just impossible to drink it. And we were pouring it in plastic cups for people, and we were just like heart dying.
Brutal, yeah.
Yeah, it was
brutal.
So sad.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't want it in cans.
I know. Then to put it in plastic. Well, I'm sure you guys know my stance on cans. I hate cans. Oh,
that's
my God.
Brutal.
So we were like, we almost put them in cans, and Chris obviously is obsessed with as traditional as you could possibly get it. So he was like, we have to do it in these bottles. And it took me like 2 years to like find them and source them. And then the whole pitch situation, which I'm sure you guys heard about, took forever to find that too. And luckily, so now we have 8 new pitch line barrels coming to us with more pitch. And so now we'll be able to really scale this up and make it a repeatable process that...
For people listening who might not be as familiar, can you kind of dive into that process in a granular sense?
We're talking about the Pitchline Pils, which is a Czech 12 Plato Czech pale lager that's double decocted, and it's all Czech ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
We're inspired, obviously, by Pilsner Kell, who used to do that before stainless steel was invented, and everyone served beer out of pitch-lined vessels.
Yeah.
We brought this back. We got all the pitch in the barrels, which have, they're super thick and they can hold pressure, and they have ports, metal ports on the tops and bottoms, and then a bunghole. And so you can actually carbonate beer inside of them, you know, tap the beer when it's ready and serve out of it, and it'll be carbonated beer. We don't trust these barrels. They're from Vernon Valley Brewing, and who knows like what they've been through.
You know Vernon Valley keeps it tight with the barrels. You know them.
Oh my God. And so we put finished beer, so we let it's our flagship standard, the Czech Pils that we make, and so after it passes D-test and we slow crash it to 5 degrees Celsius for a week, then we'll put it in the barrel so that there isn't that much sediment. It's already pretty much dropped out and blocked. And so then we'll keep it in there for 3 months, and we pitch line the barrels individually each time. And it's a mix of like paraffin and wax and all these different ingredients, super secret. Everyone back in the day used to like make their own mixture. Ours specifically is from the old Pabst Blue Ribbon Milwaukee facility. Yeah. And
because I mean, pitch and Pabst. I know. Go together like peanut butter and jelly.
Apparently they were like the pioneers for pitch back in the day. So that's super exciting that we get to say, like, these barrels from Vernon Valley, and then the pitch is from PBR or Pabst, and we have to recreate that. And so it's funny, when we went to Pilsner Kell, they just have these sheds full of pitch that are hundreds of years old. They're like, yeah, we just got so much that we haven't like gotten to yet, whatever. If you guys need any, just let us know. And we were like,
we just took a couple of
years. Well, the only thing we have left is like this one brick. I'm sure you've seen the reoccurring Instagram like picture of us just holding the brick.
The whittling brick.
We're like, someday we're gonna have to use this brick. It's been really great. We got a source to get new pitch in. I don't know if it's going to taste different. Some people used to put like eucalyptus in it and like different oils like that to like actually create the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Pilsner or Kell stands by the fact that it doesn't create a flavor at all. The only reason that they still have it in the barrels is to make sure that when they compare the stainless version to that it tastes the same.
The same.
And so that's why they're like, it doesn't impart a flavor at all. And then Evan Rail and Chris got like hammered in Prague a couple of years ago. And I guess Evan Rail was like, well, if it doesn't impart a flavor in the beer, then where does it go? Because it's being worn away in the barrel. So it's obviously like being leached into the beer.
Yeah.
And so then Chris was like, it's changing the beer. It changes the flavor. So he's been obsessed with that ever since that one conversation. And beer's super acidic, so obviously it's going to eat away at like whatever it's touching. So we do believe that there is a difference in taste. It's just hard because we never have both of them on at the same time, like the stainless version versus the pitch version.
So it's the whole batch of a standard would go in oak?
No, so we only have a 100-liter cask and then a 200-liter cask. So it's really only 3 barrels worth of liquid.
Uh-huh. Because of the time,
just the time frame
difference.
We're not
of
a production brew;
we can't
just like double decocked beers every day, or else I quit. As much as I love it, it's not fun. It's hard to time it out. Like we could just hold on to it and have them release at the same time, but we've just been so hard pressed to be like, this is so rare that when it's ready, we're like, it's ready,
Yeah. What do you think? What are your personal feelings in that flavor impact? Because to me, I admittedly I haven't had the regular standard in realistically probably years. Just when we do get blessed with notch cases showing up from nowhere, I just haven't had that beer in a while. But judging based on memory, that does not taste like what I remember the standard tasting like.
Yeah, it tastes dramatically different. I wish we could taste them side by side right now. I think it's mostly because, one, like, we literally built this bottling machine by hand, so I can't promise that this isn't completely oxidized at this point.
Well, that might be a good thing, apparently, because I know, right? I have been crushing these.
Yeah.
And it's also lower carbonated. I just remember standard having more, and Chris is going to hate me for saying this, but it has, like, this really distinct, like, clovey kind of, like, it's like a clovey, minty undertone that's just so
eucalyptus?
Unique. We've been pouring eucalyptus in the tanks. Yeah, but I don't know. It has its own. It's so unique, and I don't get that flavor in here at all. So I feel like the lagering really maybe just mellows it out a little more. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's the pitch, like absorbing it or anything like that.
Yeah, I certainly don't taste like resin.
Right.
There's just a...
Well, when you heat it up,
ephemeral softness almost to this beer that I have a hard time.
I think it's just the lager. It just is lagered so much more. I mean, I can't say that the pitch imparts flavor personally, because when we heat it up, it smells like burning plastic and burnt hair. And you're like, I don't know if I want the beer to like be touching shit that smells like this.
Yeah.
But obviously the beer doesn't taste or smell like burnt hair or burning plastic.
It's amazing.
I feel like if it was getting into the beer, it might...
At the very least, it'd be a tiny bit darker, probably, because it wasn't something I was working directly with, but the guy that built our cool ship, Forrest, just an extremely talented person, wanted to have a stab at making a fooder. So, it seemed like he did an immense amount of research, seemed all good, but there was some fatal flaws with the joints that... Obviously, once you assemble a fooder, it can't really be fixed if you're talking about joints. So as kind of a last-ditch effort, we didn't make like our own house blend of pitch, but I think it was some sort of like epoxy variant, but it was the same thing.
Yeah, so they used shellac.
It was like a black primordial ooze that he had to heat up on a hot plate.
Yeah.
But the smell, it couldn't have been that different, because the smell you're describing is identical to what that smell
was.
You're
like, I don't know if I want my beer to touch that, but...
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, it's a barrier. Like, you don't want...
Right.
And that's I'm sure you guys have seen me and Chris being like, fuck beer that touches wood, like lager specifically, and how we're like, that's not what it's all about. Because a lot of people are coming out with, like, fooder age pills.
Yeah.
And, like... Or, like, I know Threes has, like, a whole range of all their lagers touching wood right now. But we're always like, no, that's not what it's supposed to be. And a lot of people... Chris and I believe are confused about the pitch line process, about it's not sitting in oak barrels. It's, you know, it is protected by the shellac or
the
pitch.
The whole point is to keep that off
right.
the
and
wood,
then
correct?
There are, and it's hard because, so Michael, as you know, is a VHS enthusiast, my fiance.
Yes. I honestly forgot till right now, but then I remembered that.
I think we brought him a crappy one for his interview.
Yeah. And so he has all the Michael Jackson VHSs, and so we every
like
time
concerts.
No, the
the beer
the
hunter.
Beer ones.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So his favorite one is obviously the Czech one. So it's so funny every time we have someone over. He's like, "You guys got to see this.
Check this.
I have an amazing film."
There's no context at all. He just goes, "You guys got to watch this video."
I'll grab the popcorn.
Yeah, he forces like anybody that comes over our house to watch this video, and I'm like, "Honey, like they don't like beer. Like,
they don't want to.
They
see
don't
this.
Care about this at all." And so, but it's funny because in the video, Michael Jackson says like, oh, the beer's fermenting in fresh oak. Like it's not actually, it's not shellacked. It is touching the wood and all this stuff. But then when we were at Pilsner Kell, they were like, no, we do shellac it. It doesn't touch the wood. So there's so many different concepts going on and beliefs. And it's just become like a huge shroud of mystery of like, is the beer touching the wood or not? Like now nobody knows. But a lot of... like fooder age lagers that are coming out right now are touching wood.
Yep.
And they probably watched that same video where Michael Jackson says they're not shellacked. And so it's hard to say, really.
Because it begs the obvious question of, like, well, if the oak isn't imparting anything, why go through all the effort of not only transferring a beer to age an oak, but actually the real de-oak. Effort seems to be, like, de-oaking the oak.
De-oaking
the oak.
Which seems like a process and a half.
Yeah.
I'm sure that thought's crossed your mind. Where do you land on, like... I guess before you say that, I go through the same thing in my head, and Mike probably does too, about cool ship beer. Mm-hmm. Like, there's all these metric, like, it's pretty inarguable that the breweries in Belgium that have been doing it for the longest, that are doing it seemingly in the most esoteric, archaic ways,
right.
are still somehow making the best beer. Mm-hmm. But nobody really knows which of these... It can't be all of them.
Right, there's some variable happening.
Which of
there.
These things yeah. is creating this potpourri to make this, like, excellence? Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating because I feel like the modern mentality is to, like... almost go in the reverse way of, like, make everything as easy as you can and then add steps, which frankly logically makes sense. Mm-hmm. So not to cut you off, but I don't even know if that was a question, honestly.
I don't know. I just completely lost track.
It's never a question, honestly, with me. But yeah, in terms of, like, what do you think is happening? Then, because I would agree with you, something's happening, whether that's just extended lagering, but tasting this, and maybe it's just the romanticism, I can't see the same result happening in just an extended 3 months stainless
right.
lagering.
Right. I definitely do think it is just the extra lagering time. And it's being lagered, it's in our cold box. So it's not like all our other beers that we lager in our horizontal tanks are at 0 degrees Celsius. I set all the tanks to -1 Celsius and so
just
it's like super
safe.
Fucking cold.
Yeah.
And obviously we don't keep the beer in our cold box anywhere near that temperature. It's like, what, 38, 40? And so it might just be the process of lagering something longer at a warmer temperature.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe there is pitch getting into it a little bit. I mean, everyone's, you know, taught to lager as cold as you can.
Right.
So it might just be that process that nobody's really looked into.
The temperature thing...
Did I just come up with something?
Well,
I've never talked about this before.
I don't know. The temperature thing strikes me as, and I'm sure I've thought about this infinitely less than you have, but I have thought about it here and there, and the temperature thing to me seems to be the only variable you could even point at.
Right.
You
well,
know?
Also, not to mention the geometry of the tank.
Yes.
For sure.
Pretty important, I guess. Yes.
Super important.
Now that you mention it.
Oh, I mean, you have two right here. What do you guys use those for?
IPA, that's substance in both of those.
What'd you just say?
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Any lager we make goes in those. Yeah, basically, so.
Yeah, because you guys started a whole lager thing.
Yeah, kind of inspired by, you know, some Massachusetts brewery, largely. As you collect your thoughts, I'll say one thing. He might have just been being nice, but the first time we went to Notch was... I don't know. It's maybe Halloween-ish 2017. I know, like, no one comes at Halloween.
Big travel time for Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh,
it wasn't
God.
My idea. It was Alex's. And I tagged along. But anyway, I think it was, like, right on the heels of actually brewing our first lager, which is lager beer. And Chris told me he approved, and I don't even care if he was serious or not.
Approved of what?
Of our first lager.
Who the fuck cares?
All I'm saying is at the time, it made me feel really good, and it probably had some influence on us continuing. And so if he was completely bullshitting, then sorry, bud. Then
was that
this
your
Spalt happened.
And Sterling one? It was some type of Zwickel beer?
It was yes. It would have been, I don't think Spalt was in it, but it definitely would have been Sterling and probably Lemon Drop.
Yeah, because you guys get a lot of main-grown Sterling,
yeah, but they,
from what I remember.
You know, I can't blame them, but they phased out the Sterling. They phased out the Willamette. I'm not sure about the Sterling, but those were, like, the two go-tos, because to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not trying to integrate a bunch of Nugget into our hoppy program. How many different sizes of lagering vessels do you have from the stainless side?
So we ferment all of our lagers in an open fermenter, which is the same width as it is tall.
Mm-hmm.
And so they stay
very
in there
Karis
for...
Very Karis Bulba-ish. Hmm? Very De La Sen.
We did it first. Yeah. No. No, so these ones are open top fermenters. We have, there's a hinge, so there is a top to it. It doesn't hold pressure. We just got a new 20 barrel one. So funny. It came with a pressure gauge on it, and we were like,
thanks, man.
Like, ooh.
Thanks for adding that buck 50 onto the
so
bill.
So funny.
Yeah, really appreciate spending that extra $50.
but yeah, so we leave the beers in there to like half gravity, maybe close to maybe one or two Plato left in fermentation. And that allows us, one, to keep all of the cold break on top of the Kroizen and leave it behind. And uh-huh. That's a lot of people ask us, like, oh, you ferment so cold, how do you get rid of like sulfur? We're all having like these terrible sulfur problems. And we think it's directly related to open fermenter and being able to leave that cold break behind. And then it also allows us to bring all of the beer over to a fermenter that has a cone so we can collect yeast, but we also have the opportunity to spund and naturally carbonate everything. Mm-hmm. And then it stays in that tank for about 3 weeks. When it passes D-test, we slow crash for a while, hold there for a while, and then it moves over to the horizontal tanks where it literally stays at zero until Chris and I taste it and we decide that we like it enough
wow.
to release it.
Wow.
It's like every day we'll put it in a glass, and if it has this slight amount of haze or whatever, he'll be like, give it another week. And we're like, okay. And it's so nice to go from like one of the largest production breweries in Massachusetts that's like, yeah. that only makes lagers, and they're like, we don't care what it tastes like, just fucking sell it.
Yeah.
To going to someone just being like, when it's ready, it's ready. You
another
know?
Week.
Whatever.
One more week.
Another week. And it's just so we just hired Julie, our new brewer, and so she got to witness that last week, and it was supposed to be our anniversary party, and like we wanted this beer to be ready for the party, but it just didn't have the clarity we wanted yet, and Chris was just like,
nope.
Well, I guess we're not having the party. Leave it in there. And she was just like...
Walking the walk.
She's like, what the hell is going on here? It was just really fun to watch someone else experience that new, like,
oh,
the standard.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
that's
really
amazing.
Fun.
So I had no idea that there was basically three vessels.
Three.
In mm-hmm. each lager. Yeah, I assume...
And Pitchline Pils gets four. Actually, it gets five. It gets five. So it does open fermenter, close conical, horizontal... And then it goes in the barrels for 3 months, and then it gets back in just a bright tank, not a horizontal, because there's not enough liquid to cover the temp probe, so it'll just freeze. So we have to put it in an actual bright tank, and then we have to Kroizen it, and then it conditions in there, so it gets five.
So do regular lagers not actually hit a bright tank? They just are packaged right off the horizontal?
Right, and in our new brewery in Brighton, they actually are going to be lagering in those tanks, and then we can hook up serving lines and go straight to the lucre taps from the tank.
Like the old days,
yeah,
right?
Like the literal tank pub. I'm like so excited for
it. I wanna hear about that, and first, just super, super quick aside, the last time I was in Europe was in Germany, I guess 2019, and we went to Mars, you know, same bottle, like brewery I had held in a lot of high regard. I don't really know how I feel about the beer now. Because the first, we had gone like a year or two before, me, my dad, and Pete. It was just like a crazy, magical trip for us, bonding, yada, yada. First time drinking European beer there. And, you know, just had this crazy experience at Mars, which just like burnt into our heads. And flash forward 2 or 3 years later, go back, and we realized that what we thought were gravity-fed casks mm-hmm. were actually just a facade of a draft line. We saw someone open the walk-in door like across the hall, and then just saw the line kegs
no.
in there. I hate that. I'm not trying.
So you thought it was cask or like,
well,
gravity cask?
I was supposed to think that.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh my goodness!
And it was. And I will say, before I noticed that though, I was definitely positive there's way more diacetyl in these beers than the last time I was here. So I don't know. Who knows what had happened or changed? Maybe I'm the only one that changed. But,
so funny.
It was very disappointing. But but beyond that, Brighton's kind of new. I knew something mm-hmm. was going on with you guys, but I didn't know really the details in that. So talk about that a little bit. If you want. Yeah. I know that that started with a very bad place, yeah. but maybe we can...
All of this laughing is going to be tough without context, maybe, but I'm going to leave it alone.
I know.
Maybe we can flip it
well,
to
it. Well, I'm known at work because now that we're doing all of our meetings over Zoom, everyone has to see my facial expression, so they always know that I'm just, like, not having it. And so I actually got Botox a couple of weeks ago so that they couldn't see that I was upset while they were talking. It didn't work.
Was it just like a...
Yeah, I'd just be like, ugh, the face, and they'd just be like, that's rude. Why are you doing that? Like, why are you shooting down my idea? And I'm like, I'm not. Like, what are you talking about? And Michael would always be, like, introducing me to people and being like, you look so mad all the time. And I'm like, no, I don't mean to. And but, yeah, so when you do hear us laughing, it's because I'm making an awful facial expression. Brighton. It's a lot further than Salem. That's why I made that face, because I'm like, great, I get to drive even longer.
Is it like an hour from Salem?
It depends. Yeah, I mean, right now it's hard to say because there's not as much traffic as there would be without a pandemic. And so, Brighton. All right, how do I begin? So it used to be like the old Brighton Jail, and it was also like a fish and games place.
Oh, the Brighton Jail.
The Brighton Jail.
Yeah,
Brighton Jail.
A lot of friends who are bad. And then it was also like a horse track race, and it just
what?
Yeah.
How does a place that was in
I
jail
know. It's not even
also
that
host
big.
Horse racing?
I don't
Brighton's
know.
Got history.
Wow. They keep telling me it was a horse track, and I'm like, there's no way this is big enough to have like horse races in it. Anyway, so I remember when I went
Mini
to college
horses.
In Boston, I used to drive by it. We would all make fun of the building because it had these fake windows like painted on the outside of it, and we're like, this piece of shit building.
Painted windows.
Yeah, they put like particle board over them and then painted them to look like windows.
I mean, that's innovation, to be honest.
Maybe so people
I've
wouldn't
never
break into it.
That.
I don't know. It was hilarious.
That'd be a great... Just smash your fist. Anyway,
So like when I was in college, I never would have thought that I'd
Where'd
actually...
Where'd you go to school down there?
I was at Emmanuel.
Oh, yeah.
But I lived in Brighton, like right next to where Brado's Kitchen
is
now.
Yeah, yeah.
And we would drive by and always be like, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if we like built, like bought this building and like turned it into something. And
back in college.
Yeah, and I never would have known now that I'd like actually be in it. And they turned it into this beautiful German beer garden. My favorite aspect of it is they put like heaters under the ground so we never have to shovel.
Oh, baby. I got snow blindness literally one time.
His eyes looked like... Someone had injected blood with a
from
syringe
trying so hard to shovel, like, to break our patio on the tail end of winter. I just wanted our patio back.
Well, it was like a it was a blazing nice super like not a cloud in the sky day and a bunch of white snow, and Matt was shoveling at like noon and
I told Michael about it, and he's like, how do we get those under our driveway? And
oh, that's
like,
amazing.
I don't know. It's like the coolest fucking thing
I've
ever
15
heard.
Grand.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's how.
You write a check.
But yeah, so the beer garden is fucking huge. The brewery is the size of this area that we're sitting in now. And it's the smallest. Like, the tanks, I can
Meaning
stand
this
in
mezzanine?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
So, like, I can stand in between the cellar from the lagering tanks and the conicals, and like we'll probably only need like 2 foot hoses to,
yeah,
like,
I was gonna say saves money on hose.
So it's super small, but it'll be like one of the best like outdoor music venues in Boston. I think that's gonna be one of our heavy hitters. Like, I don't think the people that are coming to this brewery are expecting lagers. I think they're just coming to have a good time,
but in that kind of environment too, that beer is perfect for that.
For and sure.
Turns out up, I do like
being
lagers.
Up in Milo, I know a lot about the nudge along process into exploring beer. That
we have
super
the biggest music venue in Milo too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I can totally relate.
What is the when you talk exciting music venue, what is the capacity seating wise for something like that?
Well,
if you had
so
to
it's
guess?
Hard to say. So there's no seating. It's just like it's a collective beer garden that multiple other businesses are sharing all together.
Wow.
So you can literally get a beer and like go walk around like a strip mall kind
that's
of thing.
Cool.
And that's why you
and
say
then
we.
And there's concerts. Yeah, we. Like, yeah. There's a, it's
gotcha,
a collective.
Gotcha.
I don't even know what the other businesses are yet, but.
Probably not. Maybe super. I mean, different in many, many ways, but. In terms of like, all right, this concert thing's set up.
Thompson's
and
Point,
we're just
going to,
I guess, like, whether we reap or just feel the effects of that existing.
I mean, I think we're most excited because music is such a big part in our brand.
Yeah.
And that we finally get to have, like, that.
I'm a huge Replacements fan, by the way. So, you know, whenever I see Left of the Dial.
Mm-hmm. But so we couldn't have bands that are our current Salem tap room. And so we had curated playlists that everyone had to, you know, the staff had to adhere to keep like the vibe going of like what we wanted. And we tried to, you know, break that up with some people bringing vinyl in and DJs playing other songs that we also identified with. And obviously all the names of the beers are named after songs Chris likes. And so now we finally get to explore having that music live for people and
that's awesome.
Immerse the culture that way instead of just having it focused on beer. Sounds like it might be fun. I don't know.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
It's so far away.
As one kind of closing thing, from a creative standpoint, because with everything we've talked about, it's, I think, fundamentally important to remember you are first and foremost a brewer.
Thank you.
Can you believe it?
I remember.
You wouldn't have never, no one would know from all my interviews that I
did. What gets you excited from a maybe new creative avenues opening up with that space? Or is it more just strictly an outlet for the beers that are being focused on in Salem?
Well, Salem was meant to be an R&D facility in the first place anyways.
Yeah.
And it still is. Yeah. So it's funny that we have another one to... I don't think the Brighton place is going to be for experimentation. I think it's going to be taking the things that sell the best in Salem and just making sure they're available in Brighton. I don't know. But Salem is where all like the unique stuff comes from. And so I experiment. You would never know, but my favorite thing to brew are like pale ales and IPAs. And I really love experimenting like with that kind of stuff. So every time you see like a new pale ale come out, whatever, it's like something that I've just been like fucking around with.
Cool.
And it's so funny because the other day we were listening to a podcast with Kevin from Wayfinder, and he was like, oh, cold IPAs or whatever. And I've been fermenting IPAs with Kolsch yeast for so long. And Chris texts me, he goes, he stole our idea. And I was like, no, anyone can ferment with Kolsch yeast. And he was like, yeah, but we never called it that. And he's like, he named it first. We could have made this our thing. But we've been fermenting a lot of our pale ales with Kolsch yeast for like a long time. And it's just such an interesting, I love experimenting with the whole biotransformation with different kinds of yeasts and different kinds of hops that you wouldn't like normally use.
No, I've heard that word once on one podcast with Scott Janich, but proceed.
Well, obviously you guys are really good at it.
I'm kidding.
Oh.
He's very good at it. I'm decent at talking to people, and that's all I do.
I had to fight like tooth and nail to be like, Chris, I really want to make this IPA with Kolsch yeast. And he was just like, it's not going to be hazy enough. No one's going to buy it. I'm like, why is that the only thing anyone fucking cares about?
Yeah.
And I was like, I bet you $100 that it's going to be hazy. And so I made this beer called Lonesome Road, and it tasted like a rosé, but it was like the haze. One of the haziest pale ales like we've ever had. And he was just like, oh my God, I didn't know that Kolsch yeast could do that.
Yeah.
And so now it's just like this whole thing that we've been doing for a while. And I guess, I don't know if we decided we're going to call it cold IPA or not, but...
Chili IPA, you could go a little different. Chili hops or something.
That's a kippa.
That's a kippa. Sippa, kippa, yeah. However, what your local dialect is. It's so fucking funny to hear you say, though, that... Because, I mean, I'm sure you talk to people all the time that are breweries like this that are not specializing in lagers, being like, well, you know, lagers are kind of my favorite thing to do. It's like, the grass is always greener.
Right.
And or at least... Something out of the norm, I think, for an industry that a lot of it is routine. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is the success is based in routine.
Mm-hmm.
The breaking up of that routine is like never stops being refreshing. And
it's also really uncomfortable. And it's fun to see Chris uncomfortable with a beer coming out.
So is that the whole reason?
For lagers, we can sit there and we can write a recipe and we'll know what it's going to taste like before we even make it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's such a rigid process and we know exactly, like we fucking studied it to death. We could make a lager in our sleep, release it, never taste it, and like already know that it's going to be fine. It's the pale ales that are so, I think the reason I like them so much is because I'm just like, I don't know what this is going to taste like.
Right,
I have no idea what if it's shitty. Like, I don't... Right. I'm going to have to dump it. Like, what an experience. Like,
yeah.
It's just nice being able to experience something and not know what the outcome is. And it's just exciting for me to...
To me, it almost felt like that was what the Milo facility kind of was for you.
Oh, yeah, opened up a whole brewery for that.
Just to do, just to feel that. Just to feel that feeling. Yes. I'm like,
yeah, just like,
this isn't on
a schedule. I'm feeling a little too good about myself. I need to fucking hate myself again.
Exactly. Make another goal that you don't. Yeah,
but it's so, there's so much truth to that, though, of like, I guess as people, we I think fundamentally we crave that, whether we know it or not. Mm-hmm. We want to feel like we don't know what we're doing in some regard. Mm-hmm. Because it's that's just laced with possibility of like, well, if I don't know what I'm doing now, then I guess that means that I have everything to learn. So the chances that I've learned something are pretty high.
Pretty good.
Right. I mean, brewers specifically, like, we're always looking for like the next thing. And it's...
You guys especially.
But it's like, it's nice, you know, being recognized as being really good at one thing.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
We beat it to death. Like, I went to so many schools just to learn about Czech lagers. And I think we really, like, honed in the craft. And there's no really... And then especially finally getting the Pitchline pills into bottles, it's kind of like,
where do I go from here?
Now that that's done, like... What do we do now?
Yeah.
And there's really nothing else that's more exciting to me than like this project. So it's just fun to learn more about other types of beers that don't exist.
Hell yeah.
Because like the pale ales and the IPAs that we're all making now are not a genre of beer. They're just whatever mishmash we all decide to experiment with.
Yeah.
Know? Whereas like Czech lager is very much like this is what defines a Czech lager. And if you make it wrong, then you made it fucking wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the antithesis of the mm-hmm. approach. That just jogged my thing for one last thing. Sorry.
No worries.
It's notable to me that for that you don't mention like, well, now it's time to deconstruct German lager from the ground up.
Am not a fan of German beer.
Why is that?
I don't... And so Chris and I talk about this every time we get drunk. He's just like, why do you hate German beer? And I'm just like, So we make a lot of Salem lagers, like our new thing. And
you seem really pumped about it.
Well, because I hate Helles. I just hate Helles so much.
The Botox ain't working.
It's not, you can see. it's just, and he always says, well, I think you like hoppy beers. I think you hate malt character in it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. I think if it's well balanced, you won't get like a super malty beer. And I just feel like Helles is the most unbalanced beer that anybody's like ever created that became a traditional fucking situation.
Over like Doppelbock?
Yeah.
Just to play devil's advocate.
I mean, if you hop it and, I mean, ours is triple decocted and it's 8%, but you would have no idea. I mean, we all experienced that at our first Stark Beer Fest when we're used to drinking 4% beers and all of a sudden the staff is chugging 8%
beers. Three beers in
one. Everyone's shit-faced. Yeah. You're like, oh no. But, I mean, they wouldn't have gotten that way if it wasn't a balanced, like, easy-drinking beer.
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
I mean, even that has the balance of hoppiness, but like, bitterness and maltiness with it. It's the depth that creates that balance.
Yeah.
And, yeah, to that point, Helles is definitely lacking depth by, like, almost definition.
It's literally just like, and I had this conversation with Paul, but, like, do you guys taste colors? At all?
Kanye West makes music to colors. My palate is, I smoked cigarettes for like 15 years. I don't even taste anything. Like, I won't colors.
I would not, I would identify myself as a an occasional synesthesiac. Is that, synesthesia is the thing.
What it is.
Although it's, I think, hearing colors. So some fucking, slight modification of that.
Michael and I, like, every time we try beers, I'm like, oh, it tastes like blank color. And he goes, me too. And so I think that's one of the things we connected with.
Yeah. Right.
Really?
But we both, like, always, we judge Helles's based on how purple they taste.
So what
does that make sense?
Well, I mean,
and it's kind of like a
certainly
thick,
does to geniuses it's like a thick, in a specific thing. It makes a lot of sense to them.
It's like a thick syrupy like mess to me. I just hate it, and it tastes like you're
like
eating
purple drink.
Yeah, like a purple grapey, sticky, sugary candy or something, or like you're drinking grape juice. Or it's not a flavor that I enjoy.
I'll tell you what, though. If nothing else, that opinion's unique because to hear someone, probably the first and I maybe would say the last, unless we do this podcast again sometime and talk about Hellas, that someone would identify German Hellas as being a grapey, sticky mess.
It's awful.
And
it's malty as fuck. I can't. It's... Everyone's like, oh, a lot of the people online, like Beer Advocate and like all those mm-hmm. blogs and everything, and they're like calling Hellas crispy boys and shit like that. And it's like, what Hellas are you fucking drinking right now? Because that shit is so dense. I can't drink it whatsoever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't even, all I want to do is drink a Hellas now because it's like, I needed, so I'd like to do that soon.
Next time I'll bring some Salem water.
Actually, right. I'd be doing you a favor from the sounds.
But it's like our best-selling beer, so obviously it's
good
a me thing.
Easy
it's a
name.
Me problem for sure.
Uh-huh. Well, we've been going long already. You've been
how long has it been?
Not for my sake. Not for my sake. For the person across from me that has been as beaten down by life as I can pretty much imagine in the last 2 weeks.
I mean,
so.
It's been a nice break.
Good.
Even though we're just talking about the same shit that I've been doing.
Well, we'll keep it totally different then right now to end it up. And I don't know if you've listened to this before, but for our Mac and Telly,
we close out with what's called the three bay.
That's what I've heard.
Okay. So you're familiar?
Are you familiar with the three bay?
Yeah, it's actually funny. We went to Navari's anniversary party on Friday, and I was telling everyone, no, I have the podcast on Monday, and then all of a sudden people started chanting three bay sink. I'm not joking you. People are chanting three bay sink, and
who are those people?
Like Shaheen and Michael.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes
two
sense.
People.
That adds up. That
no, they got
the
everyone else.
Okay.
Yeah. No, believe
well,
me. It
sense.
Was a full everyone was immersed in it. And so everyone
Shout
started
out,
looking
gang.
At each other being like, what's your three bay sink? And someone sitting there has no idea what it is, and they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they're like, all right. Name three beers. Like, what do you like? You like basketball. Okay. Name three beers and three team players and why. And then everyone started going around.
Who's
and
your
just,
favorite basketball player?
Should we patent
I don't watch
this?
Basketball.
I think is the question. Should we patent,
but,
patent
the
idea? Yes.
Anyways, it is a thing that people play at bars.
That's amazing.
At, just
well,
so you know.
That's a truly amazing.
It's your turn and your time.
Great. A nice different thing to hear. Yeah. So.
Corona, and Corona.
Cool. So I'll just give you the things.
Great.
Then you can tack those
Sounds
on.
Good.
So I'm gonna give you.
Right.
I'm gonna give you three movies old enough that they're notable on VHS. Three VHS movies that you would be.
I bet you I don't know them.
That you would. That, I mean, they're huge. That you would be embarrassed. If Fava put those movies on.
Let's say this. Pair three VHSs, a.k.a. movies, with three Notch beers.
Oh, you
I
guys.
Can give you the movies if you want, because I have a list of the best-selling VHS movies of all time right,
all right
in front
let's
of me.
Hear, let's see. Because he'll just come home and be like, we're watching this movie. Everyone I
and
know loves
all
it.
And they're old movies,
yeah. No, I'm
right?
Just like,
we're not
I
talking
no
about
idea.
Johnny 5 2.
Yeah,
no,
we're not talking about
blockbusters,
yeah, but yeah. They're like in the VHS era.
Okay.
So we're going to go with like the 3-hour terrible ending cry fest that is Titanic.
Which Notch beer?
I'm going to give you all
Hit
three first,
okay,
though, and then
okay,
you get
yeah,
to
yeah,
pick
yeah.
any Notch beer and put it through it. I also, because I knew he was a VHS man, I wore a Mighty Ducks jersey to the interview.
Oh, I remember.
Didn't comment on
it. No, I got like this huge stomach. It was a mess. I felt uncomfortable the whole time. I think it affected my performance, I'm being honest. We're going to do Mighty Ducks.
Okay.
Right? Team, solidarity. And then Fantasia.
Yep.
Fantasia was my favorite Disney movie growing up. And carrying the water down and down
for
and it
sure,
just keeps
for
coming.
Sure.
That's a metaphor for life. So we're going Mighty Ducks, Fantasia, and Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to match those with three Notch beers and why. It's a tall task.
It really is.
But I haven't been needed in this conversation since you guys started talking Play-Dohs, so it's good to be back.
Sorry. I could nerd out forever. And I never get to because it just
no,
it basically turns into me and Michael just fighting about pale lagers.
It was incredible watching
every
you
night.
Two. It's just nice to be back.
So since I have no like emotional attachment to any of these movies,
yeah.
I'm
going
to have to
nice
go
job,
with the main color that they portray.
Yeah.
So like obviously Fantasia's purple.
You're big on the purple.
Well, it's awful now to me. Now I hate the color purple because of Hellas. Hellas exists.
Yeah.
And so obviously I'm going to put Hellas with that. Not to mention the whole metaphor you're saying, carrying the buckets of water up and down. It's a never-ending task, and it's just... Everyone loves Hellas, and I can't make it stop.
That's pretty good.
Very Sisyphusian for you, huh?
Mighty Ducks, Turquoise. We have this new pale ale out right now called Between the Waves, and it has Nelson. It's just 100% dry hopped with Nelson.
Yeah.
And just has this really, like, thick, turquoisey taste to it. I don't know. And maybe it's because of the... like the green or white grape flavor that the hops impart into it, and then a really thick, malty, like British backbone to it as well. And to me, that tastes kind of turquoise.
Yeah. All day, I'd say if there's any hop that I associate with a color, Nelson and somewhere between blue and green.
Right, it's turquoise.
Is 1,000% what
See?
I, yeah,
See?
I completely relate
know.
To that, yeah.
I'm not making this shit up.
I believe it.
And then Titanic to me is just very gray and like icy. And our.
The ending is.
Yeah.
Seems
our
like a good
amber rauk beer that we make from like Bomberg rauk beer, it has this really nice like ashy after flavor to it instead of like the meaty like hot dog water kind of flavor you get from some rauk beers. And it's one of my favorite beers ever. And it's very like a slate gray situation. So I'm going to have to go with that.
Great answer. Again, sorry, we didn't get to talk about beer much. I have to ask one. How was that achieved versus, as you say, like pretty even the archetypical Rausch beers have that pork kind of character.
Well, I think the decoctions are definitely creating the platform of balance to hold the smoke onto it without. It just feeling so thin and flat that the smoke like completely overpowers the beer whatsoever. And so it's really fun being able to, so like our amber one has one decoction and then our darker version of it has two decoctions and they're super hoppy. Like and I think this is an issue with a lot of like breweries that only have single infusion options. They like read a recipe and they see that lagers or specific lagers like rauk beers or even like Czech pils, they're around like 35, 40-ish IBUs. But because they can't decoct, like those beers just become so bitter and dry. And then they're like, what did I do wrong? And it's like the decoction really balances out all that bitterness. And I didn't realize how much it would also balance out like a smoke flavor. And so our rauk beers are, you know, like 30, 50% smoke, but you smell it when you first taste it. But you don't actually taste it in your mouth. You're not sitting there like, wow, it feels like I'm drinking barbecue dinner. You know, it's literally just the smell. And it's really nice to have the confidence that the decoction is really going to carry that flavor through and just make it unified. So even our new brewer, Julie, she's like, I hate rauk beers. I'm not tasting this. And I was like, just try it. And she had one sip and she was just like, this is the best beer I've ever had. And she's like, why do I hate rauk beers? And I'm like, you hate everybody else's rauk beers.
So remember, Julie, listen to me, okay, from here on out.
No, she's going to be like, let's make smoked IPA.
I mean, if you can turn someone that quick on rauk beer, then...
Especially like a brewer that knows what they're tasting, exactly what they like. And
I'll go out on a limb here and say that probably speaks to the beer. So
they're pretty good, but...
Three bay up, three bay down. Wasn't as bad as you thought it'd be.
No.
Boom, boom, boom.
I'm just glad I had a little break.
Yeah.
Cool.
Beyond a lot to chew on this. I love talking about beer night. I think one of my biggest takeaways isn't it a shame we couldn't have just talked about that?
I know.
You know?
I feel like we could have nerded out the whole time.
Oh, we could have been here till 9 p.m. tonight and then packed it on. But I guess, you know, we're confronted with not knowing what's going to happen from all this. I guess I'll take the optimistic stance and say like we can be doing this in a year and the conversation will be able to be a lot more about beer. That is a future I'd like to see, is despite how kind of laughably conservative that hope is. To your point about seeing this habitual reasons to be pessimistic about everything, maybe that's a good balance of a realistic goal we could be looking at doing next May. But anyway,
someday.
Bria and Alan, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. This is amazing. I don't even know who.
Next week, Michael Jackson. Hologram. Well, I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens.